coming up in this episode.
And he's determined to kill, at least at the outset of the book, he's determined to kill as many Mexican gray wolves or lobos as possible.
All these folks who hunted and pursued wolves ended up realizing they weren't the villains they thought, coming to be proponents of them.
You know, this one event triggered the falling apart of his whole family.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoy.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. Orlando, I've got an author from Savannah on the show today, but I regret to inform you we're not going to talk about Savannah.
I'm disappointed.
I thought you would be. Regular listeners may know that we put a quarter in the jar every time we mention Savannah on this podcast. But no, maybe you've heard of this author, though, Taylor Brown?
I have not. Maybe new to Savannah.
I don't. He says he grew up in Southeast Georgia, so he's native to the area. But you may not have heard of him because he says he spends only about 70% of his time in Savannah. He's actually spending a lot of time in the American West, which is where this book is set. It's called Wolvers.
Well, my family's from New Mexico, so.
Okay, so you've been out there.
Yes.
Okay. I may ask you about your impressions of New Mexico. It might have some bearing on how you might receive this book.
It depends on whether you offer me red or green chili.
Which do you prefer? Which is the New Mexico?
I'll take both.
Okay. Well, we've established that this book, Wolvers, has a Georgia connection, Taylor Brown, and it's about basically the people who either love wolves or want to kill them. That's the long and short of it, and it's about human transformation as well, I should say, and it's set mostly in the Gila Wilderness. So you've been to New Mexico. Have you been to the Gila Wilderness?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I spent a week there.
No kidding.
In 24.
What was your impression of it?
Oh, I just love the empty skies. That's why we went there, to stargaze, to look at the stars without any light pollution.
So you were camping in the Gila Wilderness?
In a resort. I'm not going to go on any cots.
Oh, okay. Because my understanding was that you're not really allowed to have any kind of mechanical transportation at all.
It wasn't, I guess, in the wilderness boundary. It was just a little bit outside the wilderness boundary, I think.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
But so this place seems really untouched. It's a place described in terrific detail in Wolvers.
I got to read it then.
Yeah, I mean, essentially this book is follows the main character named Trace. Now, Trace has lost his family ranch in part because of wolves, and we'll get to why he believes that. And he's determined to kill, at least at the outset of the book, he's determined to kill as many Mexican gray wolves or lobos as possible. But the book also follows his transformation, a grueling experience during which he changes his mind about these wolves, changes his perspective on
them. Well, I'm interested in that transformation, but first, how did Taylor Brown get interested in wolves?
Great question. I asked him that myself when we had a conversation about Wolvers.
And that goes back to a trip to Yellowstone that I had when I was 14. I grew up with club feet, and I had a lot of injuries and surgeries that kept me immobilized a lot of my youth. That's partly how I probably ended up becoming a writer, because I would read all the time and books were my liberation and freedom and those kinds of things. But when I was 14, I had a big surgery over the summer after my freshman year of high school. And while all my friends were out, you know, sowing their wild oats and whatnot, I had been trapped at home for most of the summer. And I was not in the best headspace, as you can imagine. But we went out to Yellowstone. I was still on crutches. It was for my sister's college graduation present. She'd asked for this. It was the late 90s, and wolves had just been reintroduced. You know, wolves were first reintroduced to Yellowstone in 95. So it was big news. And I was just fascinated from that time forward.
I remember that news with the wolves being reintroduced into Yellowstone. And that was a time of, you know, the West being popular in movies as well in the 90s. So.
I have no memory of that. And I frankly did not really know very much about Mexican gray wolves or their status as an endangered species or how many there are left now. There are only a few hundred left, if I'm remembering what Taylor Brown told me correctly. If you've ever seen a picture of these wolves, I mean, they're fascinating, beautiful creatures.
I don't want to be near them, but...
No, I wouldn't want to be near them either. See them from a distance would be nice.
You know, kind of like a safari. I would like to see them, and it would be pretty, and take a picture. But back to this transformation, how did he end up changing his mind about the wolves?
Yeah, well, let me set the stage here. So Trace's family, as I mentioned, owned a ranch. The wolves were allegedly killing cattle. I mean, wolves do kill things to survive in the wilderness. So Trace's father... killed an endangered wolf. The federal government penalties for killing this wolf basically led to him slowly losing the ranch altogether. They lost the business. Trace's father then died by suicide. His mother's addiction worsened after that. So essentially, you know, this one event kind of triggered the falling apart of his whole family. And initially, he blames the wolves. He hates these things, and a lot of people do. They do kill livestock, so ranchers are not a fan of them. In some cases, ranchers also blame the government for reintroducing them, as we've been talking about.
Reintroducing them?
Yeah. They were hunted close to extinction, and I guess what you were alluding to earlier, the reintroduction of them, breeding them in captivity and then releasing them again. The government wanted to ensure that the population survived, so they were bred and protected by the new rules and laws. But wolves are going to wolf, right? They hunt livestock, and naturally, ranchers don't love that.
I mean, why don't he even blame the government? I mean...
Well, he's not a fan of the government, I will say, but that's not necessarily his focus. But he is hired by people who do hate the government and sort of use the wolves as a kind of entry point for that hatred for people. Like, let's kill these wolves. They're kind of a symbol of the federal government's intrusion into property rights. So Trace in this book sets out, at least in the outset, on a mission to kill a specific pack of wolves led by a specific wolf named 111.
How does like a wolf get a name?
Well, I mean, that would be the tracking name for some of these wolves have tracking devices on them. That would be 111 was tracked as part of being part of a pack and got this kind of legendary status for being able to sort of elude hunters and escape them and not just not be killed despite, you know, being such a mythical figure.
Superhero.
Yeah, kind of that. So that's kind of the setup for that transformation.
And does this transformation sort of involve Trace, the main character, becoming more attached to the wolf?
Over time, yes, but that's not how the transformation happens. Like Trace was out hunting them, and he essentially steps into a steel trap. You know these traps that kind of clamp onto your leg? Happens to wolves all the time, right? So he has this experience where, imagine, you're in the wilderness where no vehicles are allowed, the Gila wilderness, and you've got to hike miles and miles to get to your vehicle with the steel trap clamped to your leg. Here's how Taylor Brown described writing that scene.
Trace goes through a crucible that is... not unlike a crucible that thousands of wolves, since the steel trap was invented, have gone through. And I think that that helps to give him some empathy because he realizes just how challenging, you know, life can be when you're caught in a trap like that. And also maybe comes to have some respect for an animal that you know, lives in a world with such threats and continues to survive.
So he experiences what the wolf experiences, and so that's how he develops empathy and changes his mind.
Exactly. And Brown told me that this transformation that Trace undergoes came less from Taylor Brown's imagination and more from his research, that there are several documented cases of wolvers essentially changing their tune about the wolves after watching them for a period of time.
In my research, I found that pattern again and again. From Aldo Leopold, who pushed forward, you know, one of the great fathers of modern conservation, who pushed forward the creation of the Gila Wilderness, which is our first designated federal wilderness area. You know, he has this famous passage in San County Almanac where he kills what is likely a Mexican wolf or a Great Plains wolf, and that helps to change his perspective and him to come to that philosophy of thinking like a mountain. But I found that again and again. Carter Niemeyer, Roy T. McBride, Ernest Thompson Seton, all these folks who hunted and pursued wolves ended up realizing they weren't the villains they thought and really coming to have a great respect for them and coming to be proponents of them and their place in the wild. And of course, science has now shown us that, you know, these are keystone predators that are hugely important for the health of an entire ecosystem outside of, you know, any rights that they have just to exist.
So this book just can't be about this transformation because, you know, he gets in a trap and he changes his mind and then that's the end of the book.
Yeah, no, this is not like Wolves Live Happily Ever After once Trace changes his mind because, you know, Trace was hired by these anti-government folks that I mentioned. He has this experience with the bear trap. He encounters these guys who hired them, gave them the money back. He didn't spend any of it. He said, listen, I'm done. I'm off this job. And they kind of leave, but he learns later on that they are not really done with him. So now he becomes essentially hunted by the new guy that these government anti-government types.
And now why is he being hunted?
He's hunted, well, because he's been, you know, he knows who these guys are. He knows that they're breaking the law, and he's just like, nope, not going to have this. So Trace has a different set of choices. He's got some help along the way from a survivalist type who kind of alerts him to the threat, like, hey, now these guys are after you and the wolves. And there's also an old flame here in this book that
you got to have a romance.
I know there's that kind of tension as well. That kind of lends, I think, a little three dimension to him. He's not just this guy who, you know, hates wolves and then becomes obsessed with them. Like he's really wrestling with some things in his own life and, you know, the mourning of the fate of his family.
What happens to 111?
Oh, good question. So what was interesting in this book is that the chapters alternate perspectives. So you see Trace, of course. You see the perspective of the guy who's hunting Trace. And then you also see chapters completely from the perspective of the wolves, from 111's perspective. Yeah, so I asked Taylor Brown what it was like to write those short chapters from the perspective of the wolf.
Is kind of a philosophy of mine that I think that a lot of our literature, especially canonical literature that we grow up on, is so anthropocentric. You know, it's all about humans, the human perspective. I mean, that reflects how we are very fairly egocentric as individuals and as a species. And I find myself wanting to branch outside of that and to give animals a little bit more of a voice than we often get to see in literature. Usually in literature, a lot of the time they're caricatures or they are, you know, a wolf character would be a human in wolf's clothing or a human in wolf skin. And I wanted to try to provide a more accurate reflection of wolf behavior and biology and those things.
Well, he's talking about historical literature. I mean, what examples of historical literature do we have where the animal's perspective is centered? I mean,
right. What, Jack London, I guess?
What was the one with the cockroach and the guy turns into a cockroach?
Oh, I mentioned this. The Metamorphosis. But that's anthropomorphic, right? Because the cockroach is still thinking like a human being, right?
Well, so, what language does the wolf speak?
Well, I mean, it's from a third person perspective. So we're watching the wolves.
Oh, from a third person perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's close. It's a close third person. So
okay.
We're seeing them, for example, at one point, one of the wolves is killed. And there's mourning. You see the wolves kind of mourn the passing of that wolf. So to some extent, you could say, yeah, that's a human thing that the wolves are doing, or maybe it's just a thing that humans share with wolves, which is, I think, part of the trick of this book. The magic of this book is that it's making you see that, like, wolves are not that different. They're not as scary as you might imagine them to be because they do have these feelings, too.
So what is the overall experience of the book?
Well, there's a lot of action in this book, right? Because, I mean, we're talking about that first scene, it's basically the first third of the book where Trace is in that bear trap hiking out of the Gila wilderness.
Horrifying.
Horrifying experience, right? But that's fiction writing 101, right? Like, you stick your character in the worst possible scenario, and then you watch them fight like hell to get out of that situation. And you're on their side, right? Who doesn't sympathize with a guy who's got a bear trap clinging to their leg? So there's that. Throughout the book, the language lends itself to the sort of sensory experience of being outside, right? You described what it was like to see the stars from near the Gila wilderness. I mean, there's a lot of sensitivity to light, sensitivity to sound. There's a lot of snow falling. Some of the book takes place around Thanksgiving. So there's cold weather. You can kind of hear the sound of a cold winter day or the approach of winter and how cold things can be. It's like being on a hike in some ways, and then you're just outside a lot. And I think overall, the tension that he creates, where there's a hunt going on pretty much all the time, just who gets hunted changes, really ratchets up the stakes And they stay high throughout the novel. Now, I know I didn't say what happens to 111, right? I mean, I'm not going to
give that away. We're not going
to
do that.
Nor can I give away what happens to Trace. But I will say the ride that Taylor Brown takes you on is worth it here. Really cool book.
Well, great to hear about it. The book is called Wolvers by Taylor Brown, who spends 70% of his time. That's an exact percentage.
That's what he said. Yeah, 70% of his time in Savannah.
Peter, thanks for talking to me about it.
Happy to.